Link building is hard. There is no way around it. One of the most time-sucking sub-activities of link building is finding the email address of your prospects. Luckily for you, we have wasted hundreds of our own hours thinking and experimenting on what the best way to do this as efficiently as possible is, so you don't have to nerd it out yourself. In this episode, we are sharing the tactics we use in real life to find those damn emails. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Authority Hacker Podcast, the place to learn field-tested, no BS tactics to growth hack your online business and finally live life on your own terms. Now, your host, Gael and Mark.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Authority Hacker Podcast. Today I'm back with Mark after an interview with Ben. How's it going, Mark?
Good, thanks again.
Again, yeah, I guess we talked three times today already, so, but this is the first time for the people who are listening. Anyway, today's topic is how to find the emails. How do you find these freaking emails for link building? Because it's just like so annoying. You think that's like the most simple thing to do. You think like, oh, it's easy. Like, come on. Like, if you're building a website, you're giving a way for people to contact you. Until you actually try to run an outreach campaign and check hundreds of websites. It's like, I think one of our link builders, like when he first started, he was like, when I was asking him how is it going after like 2 days, he was like, oh, I'm losing faith in humanity. Just because finding emails, which seems so obvious, is actually really not an easy thing to do. If you've never done it yourself, I suggest you try it over like 20 sites. Pick 20 random sites. If you can find a contact email for all of them, and you need that email to essentially send a pitch for your link building, then you're lucky. But it's pretty complicated. So I'll let you just take it over and explain to people why people want to find these contact details in the first place.
Yeah, so before we get into the actual tactics, it's important to think, why might you want someone's contact info? Obviously, if you're doing some kind of white hat link building, guest posting, skyscraper, broken link building, there are others as well. Emailing someone, getting in their inbox is likely the best way to elicit a response. Those kind of contact forms on the contact page, I'm often kind of doubt whether anyone reads them on some sites. I know on ours,
we do you read ours?
I don't personally know, but our support team does, because we do have like support queries and stuff come in there mixed in with guest posting requests and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah,
I will say that the people who email me with guest posting requests, I at least read them. I don't necessarily respond to all of them, but I at least read them. So that in there is kind of proof that finding an email address is better than using a contact form for the most part. I think in some smaller sites as well, people put the contact form and then sometimes it's completely broken. Sometimes they just don't bother reading it, or they don't have the proper forwarding and stuff set up.
I would say one thing though. I would say the value of an email address increases as it gets more difficult to find it. So my email has been dropped in many places, and I get literally like 10 pitches per day on like guest posting on Authority Hacker, stuff like that, etc. Like getting a link, like skyscraper stuff, etc. And the truth is, like, I'm not replying to any of them, and I'm barely reading. Like, I know the subject lines, but to be frank, given the amount I receive, I just don't consider any at this point. And for you, I think it's a bit different because your email is a little bit less public. But like mine was like the email for the email address, etc. So like it's everywhere. And so I would say that if you ever struggle in finding an email, consider that everyone else is struggling to find that email. And if you're willing to go the extra mile and use a lot of the tactics we're going to talk about in this episode to find that email, you will be one of the few that actually reaches that person. And like, that's a perfect case. Like, you send me a pitch, I probably won't read it. You send a pitch to Mark, he will probably read it. Why? Because he probably receives a bit less because his email is less public. So,
by the way, don't send me pitches, please.
But you know what I mean? I think it's important to say that. Like, it's like there's increased value in difficulty. Like, it almost pays off for the difficult, like the extra time you're putting in, because your chances of success are higher as you're struggling to get emails.
It's not just though for link building. There are many other kind of less or non-SEO reasons why you might want to contact someone, and you might need their email address to do so. For example, you might want to pitch them some kind of business collaboration idea, partnership. You may have some kind of idea to work on there. You may be, let's say, a writer and you want to write for them as not as a guest poster or anything, but just, you know, trying to find a job. You might want to contact them that way. You may want to recruit them as an affiliate, or you may want to initiate some kind of legal proceedings against them because they are cyber squatting on some kind of domain which you may or may not.
You mean they're buying a domain that pretends to be us? That's what you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't imagine anyone doing that. You know?
I can't imagine. Like, that would be really stupid and lame, but I don't know nobody ever does that.
But it happens. There you go. So
okay, so that's why you want to find the email. Now, as we said, one of the problems with this is some email addresses just get spammed a lot, and then as a result, people make it harder to contact them. I can't anymore because it's mentioned in places that I can't remove. But that's why, you'd think that most websites would just put an email address. But the reason they don't is not because they're idiots, but rather because they don't want to receive that many emails, and they almost want you to put the work in to find that email so that, they get less people pitching them stuff. So
it's essentially like an arms race, right? You have the people trying to find emails, and then you have the people trying to stop people finding their emails. And the better people get at finding emails, the better the email owners have to get at protecting or hiding or obfuscating their emails.
Yeah. So that's why, that means that as time passes and as more and more people do outreach, which is the case, finding emails is going to become more and more challenging. And so a lot of the stuff we're going to share now is we're going to talk about the obvious ones, but there's some less obvious ones that are not yet used and abused and allow you to find a lot of emails that people don't find by default. So what I suggest is that we jump directly into the first point.
The first one, and this is super obvious, by the way, we ordered this list in the kind of the process which we would follow when trying to identify an individual's email. So the first place you would obviously check is their website, right? Now, we already said that a lot of people don't have their email address on the website and they're using contact forms and that kind of thing instead. But it's always worth checking because I would say, 10%, 15% will have it in one of these places. So it's either going to be somewhere in the homepage, the about page, the contact page, somewhere in the sidebar, which may not be in the homepage, but maybe in a blog post, or somewhere in the footer, which is probably on any page. Very quick way of looking for an email address, Control F or Command F on Mac, and then search for the @ symbol, as in the middle, the thing that's in the middle of someone's email address, and then look that way. In some cases, that might not work because they've put an image version of the text instead of the actual email as a way of protecting against scrapers.
Yeah,
scrapers. There are many tools out there. Scrapebox is one, but there are tons of automated scrapers. I haven't used it personally, URL profiler, but there are really massive spam factories out there that they're just trying to find as many email addresses as possible by pulling all the text out of a web page and processessing it, looking for email addresses, then just adding it to some huge database that they can, I don't really know what they do with it, but send kind of spammy offers or something like that too. So anyway, the first place to start is these places. You may be saying, okay, Captain Obvious, if I wanted to find that, I wouldn't need to listen to this podcast. And it's a fair assumption, but we're starting from the beginning here and giving you the absolute basics. So that's step one. Anything to add to that, by the way?
No, not really. I guess if people found the podcast, they probably can find the contact page.
Right.
So my assumption is most people can figure that out.
Yeah, I think you're correct there. So point number two, look in the privacy policy. Most sites out there will have a privacy policy. I believe there's some kind of SEO value in doing that. Google thinks it's a little bit more trustworthy. Any proper business will have a privacy policy on their site just because you kind of have to, especially in this era of GDPR and crazy legislation like that. Within the privacy policy, you are required to put contact details for your site. The vast majority of people will put some kind of email address in there. Now, what often happens is that people create the privacy policy earlier on when they're building the website and they haven't been spammed to death. So they kind of forget. They're not too conscious of hiding their actual email. So they'll put their email in there. And you can use that to find their email very quickly and email them. Again, a lot of people are putting images of their email. So like taking a screenshot of the text and putting that image there instead of the actual text of the email itself to sort of counteract scrapers as well. So the control F tactic might not always work there.
Or they just put a non-monitored email as well. Like a lot of people, you know, they do it after they put the website up and they just put the default admin at or something like an email that they never check.
I find that a lot of companies, though, they'll put like their support department or something like that. If anyone's putting it, I think you legally have to be able to be contacted that way through it in case anyone has some kind of privacy concern. I don't think that happens very often, but either way, it's a good place to check, second on the list in the privacy policy. The third place I would look would be on social media. And you may think, oh, that's useless. I can't find their email address from social media. No one's that dumb. Well, if you go to a website's Facebook page, that's the website of the page, not the page owner. The Facebook page of the website, not the individual, and then go to the about page. So like facebook.com/authorityhacker /about, the about tab. Yeah, that's the one. Then an incredible number of people have their emails in there and you can just use it straight away. Like that is the most common way we find people's email addresses when we're manually hunting for.
One more thing I want to say about this is sometimes, even often, it's worth just contacting people via the Facebook page because Facebook incentivizes people to reply. You know, they put like our super fast reply and stuff like this. And especially for like bigger pages, they kind of care about this status of like getting this green tick that they reply fast. Mm-hmm. And so they have to reply basically. Otherwise, it kills their average. Your chances of getting a reply by just pressing the message button on the Facebook page is, especially for like things like content promotion or even Skyscraper, you can try. It's kind of like a channel that is not used by link builders too much, but I've had decent success with it when I've done it manually. You know, the kind of pages where they would never reply to your emails, you know, like the bigger ones, but mm-hmm. they don't want to kill the reply rate on Facebook. At least you get a reply, you know?
Yeah. The actual about tab on the Facebook page itself, it's been so successful for us that we actually tried. We didn't manage to make it work, but we tried experimenting with some way to kind of scrape the Facebook page and then automatically add /about to it and then scrape that page for an email address. We couldn't make that work for various technical reasons, but there's probably someone smarter than me would probably be able to figure that out. It's such a reliable source that I think it's well worthwhile.
Yeah, people don't put fake emails there as well.
Yeah, so. I think the reason for that is similar to the privacy policy. Like people set up their Facebook page generally when their business is new, right? And they don't think about being spammed. They don't care so much at the time. And because not that many people are aware that the email address is here, they're not getting hammered and they haven't realized that and it's still there. So
yeah, it works pretty well. I would also say that, so on YouTube, when you set up your profile, you actually have an option to put your email address, and it's kind of like hidden. You need to like press a button when you go on the About tab of any YouTube channel, and it just displays the email, so you can't scrape it. But a lot of creators put emails for like advertising inquiries and stuff like that, and you can use that to contact people, so that's a good one. And also Twitter and Instagram bios as well. This is more for like influencers. They will have kind of like, you know, advertise with us and then give their email and you can contact them and basically they're like content services for them. So like that's one way of getting email from social media. But the YouTube About tab very often has emails actually. Just nobody ever reads the About tab on YouTube, but it's quite useful for outreach.
Yeah, I think some people have it on LinkedIn as well, though. I think that did get scraped a lot. So they disabled it automatically or disabled it.
I'm pretty sure that's how Hunter started. I'm pretty sure Hunter was just a
link. Yeah. we'll get to Hunter in a bit. But the next one on our list is in the domain Whois. So the Whois record is when you buy a domain, you have to provide certain contact information. You have to specify a registrant, an admin, and a technical contact. I don't really know why these three things are done the way they are, but it's just the way the world works. And most people, when they're buying a domain, it's their own contact information for all three. Now, back in the day, that was great because you could just go on any Whois lookup service such as name.com/whois-lookup or just Google Whois domain and there's dozens of search engines that will allow you to do this. And you just put in any domain name and it will give you these three contact information, name, address, email, and phone number often as well. But early on, that was a great way to find people's contact information, people's email address. But of course, the spammers figured that out quite early on. It's an easy thing to scrape. So they started to scrape it. And if you've ever bought a domain in the last few years and forgotten to add WhoisGuard or some kind of Whois privacy to it, which some registrars do that automatically now, but I think there are some who don't. If you've ever done that, as Gail once did for a new site and my contact info was on it, I got probably about 20 or so calls from, I think most of them were Indian web design companies trying to sell me on some kind of web design package for my new website. Didn't really require their services. I got a bunch of emails as well. Didn't really require their services, but there you go. So this WhoisGuard thing has kind of added a level of privacy to it. So you can't just go on there and find someone's email address. What it does, though, is it will give a long, convoluted kind of letters and numbers mixed up email address. So it'll be like abz123456789 blah, 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 .protect@whoisguard.com. And the first string of characters, it can often have, you know, 20 or 30 characters in there. And they're really smart. They put an image. They don't put the actual text. So you can't just highlight it all and copy paste it. I actually ran a test where I emailed our own one on Authority Hacker just before this podcast and Gail received it, no problem. So it does work. I believe they have some kind of filtering in there. I'm not quite sure how they kind of protect you from spammers or whatever, but either way, if you email that address, it's going to get through to the owner. We had a legal issue once where someone used that to contact us for one of our sites. For sure, it works. The issue with it is it's a bitch to type it in. You have to, because there's like capitals and lowercase and numbers and letters, and it's just, I did
it's
it.
It's like this keyboard typing test, you know, like if you can actually type properly.
Yeah, I mean, when I did that test earlier, I made two mistakes and I like double checked it. So that's a bit annoying, but you can use any kind of optical character recognition technology to get around that. There's a really good Chrome extension called Copyfish. It's free. There are dozens other. So if you're listening to this and Copyfish is gone or not around, just search for Chrome OCR extension. And then what Copyfish allows you to do is just drag like a square. You click the button and drag a square around the image and it will kind of scan it and then translate that into actual text. And you can just highlight the text and copy it and then use that as the email. There are probably some easier ways to do this at scale and stuff as well, but I haven't experimented with anything like that. The one thing I will say about this is, if you're emailing someone at that address, they're going to know because they're going to see the to field with that information in it. So they're going to know that's how you contacted them.
I mean, most people don't even know what's going on when they receive that email, you know?
Sure. I think maybe most website owners are a little bit more clued up than most people, though. The only thing I would say is that you should try and personalize your email as much as possible if you're doing something like that. So put their name at the start. So they know it's not just a random someone trying to sell them SEO or something.
Cool. The next one is actually using a tool that guesses the email. How do they do that?
So there are a number of tools out there. A good example would be findthat.email. And the way it works is it's essentially an email verification service. I don't know the technical way that it manages to do this, but a lot of people who have big email lists will, and maybe they're moving from different providers or they've bought a list from someone else, they will run it through a service like this that verifies that all those emails are legit, are deliverable. There's some kind of technical way that they can do that by like checking information on the domain. And it's not like 100% accurate, but it's pretty good. Anyway, they've utilized this technology with a bit of guesswork. So they combine a bit of guesswork with this technology to allow you to enter. So if you know someone's name, their first name and their last name, and you know the domain, then you can put that information into a service like Find That Email, and it will come up with every possible permutation of someone's name. So let's say it was John Doe and the domain was Authority Hacker. Then most likely the email would be something like John at Authority Hacker, John.Doe at Authority Hacker, or JD at AuthorityHacker.com. And it has a bunch of other ones as well in its database that it checks by default. And then it tries to verify all of these email addresses. And the strongest hit that comes back is likely to be that person's email address. So it's not foolproof. Some people have very odd email addresses, but the vast majority of people, you'll be able to find their email in this way, which is really cool. The one downside, obviously, you need to know their full name. So that could be a potential block in the road here.
No, most of the time it's not that hard. I mean, yeah, I guess. When you Google the first name and the site, like if I don't know the last name of someone, I'll just Google the website and the first name, and you know, something's going to pop up like their LinkedIn profile or whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever social media, and it's going to give me the last name, you know?
Yeah, you can usually find that. And again, things like privacy policy, about page. If someone's blog post, and they might have like an author page or an author bio at the top or bottom,
Twitter it'll be profiles, there. Et
yeah, social media is a really good one. I think if they have like a Facebook page or a Facebook group, especially, you can look for admins of that group. Maybe you can look for admins of that page. I'm not sure if that's still a possibility. And you can sort of find their name there. But in my experience, most people will publicly put their first and last name kind of out there. So shouldn't be too tricky.
Cool. The next one is the best one.
Yeah. So if for whatever reason you cannot find someone's first or last name, then there are other services out there which kind of do the same thing. In fact, they don't do the same thing at all. They're fundamentally structured in a different way, but they're like databases. So they allow you to put in the URL only, and then it will spit out a list of email addresses that this tool has identified, which is associated with that domain. The most popular, and if you've been listening to us for any length of time, you probably use it or have used it yourself, hunter.io. It's the most popular, and I think at the moment the best one still. I'm not quite sure how they
test last time. Like,
it was a while ago now. It was about 18 months or so ago last time I tested it.
Okay.
Against the competitors.
So if you have any tool that you think can compete, please send it to us and we'll check it out.
Yeah, I believe Hunter. I'm not really sure how they got their data originally. There's probably some kind of scraping involved in there, but I know they also released a number of Yesware type plugins, which would allow you to, they would like connect to your email address and allow you to monitor when email was being delivered and a bunch of free stuff like that. And from those plugins, they were also able to capture email address information. So I think that's how they kind of, or one of the ways in which they boosted the size of their database.
It's kind of interesting how these free tools just power these paid tools behind. I mean, Ahrefs and Clickstream is basically the same way. Like the click data they get from search, etc., is from these crazy search bar that you install on your browser, etc., and just monitors people, etc. So it's kind of the same. It's kind of interesting to see the free economy behind the paid tools, actually.
I'm not really too sure the impact of GDPR on all that, because I know that was like a big, that was potentially a big issue for those types of companies like Hunter. But, you know, we're 1 year or so past the date of that, and it still works the same. It still does everything you need it to. So, yeah, Hunter's great. We've been using it for a long time. It's so handy because you can do it. It allows you to do things at scale, which most of the other methods, they're more for very targeted approaches.
Yeah.
With Hunter,
we find a lot of the emails we use through Hunter. Like that's one of the main, that's why I say it's the best one. Because it's like, if you want to scale, yeah, look at this tool.
Hunter is the 80-20 for finding emails, right? You find as many as you can with as little effort, but everyone else can do that as well, remember. So if you really want to go the extra mile and find those hard to find email addresses, then one of the other approaches is probably going to be better for you.
Yeah.
With Hunter and actually with Find That Email, you do get 50 free credits per month. So if you're just doing this on a small scale, then it's essentially free. It's perfect. If you want to scale it further, then you obviously have to pay the pricing plans. I think they start at about €50, €50, something like that, and go up from there. But the thing with Hunter and the paid plans is it allows you to input a CSV with a big list of domain names, and then it will output the email addresses that it can find for each domain. Now, anyone who does link building can automatically understand how powerful that can be, because you can really scale your email finding by this tool. There still is another step, and you have to select which email to choose if there are more than one. I know some people who
we should just talk about this now, actually. We should just talk, like, we want to talk about this on, like, how do you pick the right email when you get multiple emails per website?
Yeah, so there are a couple approaches there. I know a lot of people who just actually send emails them all and like try and kind of, it's a bit kind of spammy that. We don't like to do that. Generally, it's better to go with, for link building, this is, it's better to go with a personal email rather than a generic. So email, I don't know, joe@domain.com as opposed to admin or info@domain.com. That tends to be more likely to get a response from the personal one. If you're doing link building, guest posting, Skyscraper, that kind of stuff, then usually emailing an editor, content manager, someone in that kind of department, if you can identify their job title, which Hunter actually does as well. I think it connects with LinkedIn and tries to pull their job title that way. I think that's how they do it anyway. They don't always have job titles for everyone, but it's very handy when they do. So that's a good approach. I would say avoid any kind of sales type email, because the sales department don't care. They're not gonna help.
They're only on commissions. So. But yeah. They also Hunter just tells you if it's a generic or personal email as well. So you can already, I would filter out most generics and just focus on the personal ones.
Yeah, the way it displays it in the Hunter output when you're doing it in bulk is very good as well, because each of these fields is like a column in the CSV, so you can filter it out very, very easily. So that's definitely a big plus for Hunter there. I would also say that for smaller sites, you know, contacting the CEO or whoever is the owner is good. But for bigger sites, that's generally, those people don't have so much time. So they're not going to listen to you, as Gail is a prime example of.
We're not that big, but I just have I'm just French, you know.
So unless you have some kind of strategy to really make a big impression on the CEO, then it's just best to avoid those people and go for, you know, more middle management who are actually working in the day-to-day thick of things with editing content and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Let's jump on the next one. Do you have anything else to say about Hunter?
No, that's it.
Yeah, there's also a lot of like other tools like Snowvio, etc. But as we mentioned, we've tried most of them a while ago, and by far Hunter was the best one. That's why it's the one we recommend.
Okay, I just want to say something about Snowvio or Snov.io. I don't know how you pronounce it. They had an AppSumo deal a while back where I think it was lifetime, where you got very good value, or it appeared to be very good value for what it is. The issue with Snowvio was the quality of the data was really poor. I had a really good example. I forget the domain, but if you put it in Snowvio, there's like 10 different emails that come up, all for the same person, like john.roberts, j.roberts, j.r, john, j.roberts at domain.com for all of them. Someone's not going to have all those email addresses, like one person for on their domain. Whereas Hunter, it found the correct one. And it only displayed that one. I think you kind of get what you pay for with these tools to a certain extent, at least. I mean, I'm definitely open for trying new ones that get released, but yeah, Hunter seems to be the winner there.
That's the thing as well. If you send a lot of emails to addresses that don't exist, you're essentially going to be flagged as a spammer, and then your other emails will not deliver nearly as well, to the point where it's going to be very difficult for you to reach the inbox of people you're emailing. So if you're trying to cheapen out your tools and, you know, use these kind of like lower quality tools, in the end, it's actually going to hurt you and probably cost you more, because you're going to have to use more credits from these tools and to just get the same amount of links, because you just won't reach the inbox nearly as much, you know?
So yeah,
I would say don't cheap it out.
With deliverability, it's a bit of an art form, kind of like how SEO is, really. No one's exactly quite sure what the best strategy for each, like, you know, warming up inboxes and all that stuff is. But I think it's pretty much universally agreed on that if you have delivered emails and if those get opened and especially responded to, those kind of signals are very positive for whomever is monitoring your and controlling how much your email is going to be delivered. So for that reason, having quality data is super important. And this is especially true if you have like a new domain or you're kind of trying to warm up your outreach for a domain you haven't done link building for. So yeah.
You can really shoot yourself in the foot at the beginning. So yeah. Okay, what is the next tactic?
Okay, so number six, and this might be like, again, super obvious, but hardly anyone does it. Ask for it. So this is essentially turning it into a two-step approach. If you don't have the contact info, reach out to them in some other way and ask for it. That could be contact form. Yeah, you could tweet at them. You could email. This is when you definitely can email their support or even their affiliate team. You can contact them directly on LinkedIn. Is it in message or whatever it's called? Again, you can contact them directly on Facebook, either to their page or if you can find them a personal message, though that will go to their other inbox. I think they still get notified of it in most cases, and you can sometimes get it there. But taking the time to ask someone for their email address, getting it, it works, plain and simple. Just nobody does it because it kind of disjoints their link building process in a way. And there's it's a little bit more slow. To actually, the time to acquire the email is much slower than.
I think you could automate it actually. If you were scraping for Twitter links, for example, and just automating the tweets, I think it, to some extent it can be somewhat automated.
You have to be careful because then your Twitter feed is just all asking people for their email addresses and that kind of thing. And
what you need to do is you need to hack the Twitter accounts and do it from random people. No, okay, sorry.
But living up to the name Authority Hacker right there.
Yeah, okay.
The other way I would say, and like really nobody does this, is to call them and ask for it. Often businesses will have phone numbers displayed on the website, customer support, some phone number somewhere. If you can find that, then call them and ask them for their contact information.
Yeah, Kevin does that.
Sorry?
Kevin Espiritu, who we had on the podcast, he does that actually for his link building. He actually, when there's a phone number, he calls because he said he gets like 100% response rate versus, you know, 5% or something. So yeah.
Calling someone is already establishing the relationship. Like you probably chat with them for, even if it's just 20 seconds or so, they'll remember you. They're not going to, and you're going to stand out against the 12 other people that have already emailed them asking them today to add a link to a blog post because it's great, new and updated. So yeah, great, great tactic. Did Kevin say like how often or like what kind of results he had with it?
He didn't do a lot, but he said he got great results. I mean, Kevin's like, you should, if people want to hear about this kind of like more sniper approach, you should listen to a podcast with Kevin because he was even explaining that he got his book deal from doing one of these approaches actually. And that's how he got introduced to like a blogger that had a publisher. He was introduced to a publisher and eventually like he just released his book right now. So it's, yeah, I don't think he does it very often because it takes time. But, you know, when he's trying to do link building, he just like doesn't mind. He just goes and calls if you need, because like most online marketers are not willing to do that. So it gives you an edge. Usually,
like 99.9% of online marketers will never call someone. So if you can do that, I mean, it costs nothing on Skype or whatever these days. So it's not really a cost thing. I get that it takes a little bit of time, but I mean, what are we talking, like 30 seconds a minute for each one? I think it'd be worth it. But definitely something I want to experiment with a bit more actually.
I'm even thinking like maybe salespeople would be great link builders. You know, you can just hire some salespeople. Just have them cold call companies to develop partnerships, quote unquote, but really your end goal is to get links plus, you know, other stuff you can get out of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you think about it as well, people are cold calling, asking them for like money and to buy stuff all the time. So for someone who's good at doing that, to call them and ask for the email address, for the contact information, no problem. Yeah.
But that's what we used to do when we had the agency, right? That's how I developed Outreach. It was to get customers, actually.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like I scraped like every city in the US and I appended like SEO, web design, et cetera, and tried to essentially get outsourced work from agencies. And so the first version of our link building outreach processes at the time when I was running it was literally to ask for money. So when we switched to like asking for links for it, it was like incredibly easy and felt so. People like, I think a lot of link builders people are intimidated by link building. Imagine if you call people and you're asking them for money. Well, that's the job of millions of people around the world. So really getting links is not that difficult.
You can realistically hire people to do this on Upwork for not very much money. I would guess $15 an hour would cover someone pretty good to do this. So
I actually think we should try that.
Definitely want to experiment with this, actually.
I like how this podcast is becoming a brainstorming session right now.
I guess you do have to be a little bit cautious. You're not just hiring some random person with no quality control who's
Go wrong?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could go wrong there. So we'll come back to you with a podcast once we've done this a bit.
On why you should not do it, you know?
Yeah. All right.
That's probably the podcast after the one where we say we reopen an office or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go to the next point.
Okay, so number 8 is ask for an intro from a mutual friend. Instead of asking the person directly for the contact info, try and find mutual friends. There are obviously two great websites, which Facebook being the most obvious one, but LinkedIn as well, really, really good for identifying mutual friends you have. Even if you're not connected with someone on either of the platforms, it'll show you who the mutual friends are most of the time, unless they have Uber privacy settings on. And you can ideally just reach out to this mutual friend you know and ask for the introduction. That's the best strategy. If they're not willing to introduce you because they don't know you, or they're just some random that you added on LinkedIn and you don't really know them, then maybe you ask for the contact info and they might be more willing to give that out. But one thing about this is that having someone else introduce you, it automatically kind of raises your, I guess, what's the word, like social, is it approval or not? What's the word?
Yeah, people will reply because essentially they don't want to like get the other person to not like them anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're socially obligated to reply.
It's also like if you meet a random stranger, you're kind of naturally a little bit suspicious of them. But if that person's with your best friend, then automatically, without them saying a word, view of them is automatically increased just because they can kind of be associated with that person whom you already know. Asking for the introduction in link building is a huge, huge way to get not only to get their contact info, but to get a response from them once you have it. So definitely would recommend that. If you're looking to identify, like find their personal social profile on LinkedIn, it's super easy because you can just search for like the company and search for them. A lot of people have privacy settings and stuff on Facebook. It's harder to search. And there's just so many people on Facebook. If they have a common name, it can be a little bit challenging to find. But again, look at their Facebook page and any groups that they run and look for admins of the page, admins of the group. And you can often find their profile that way. Plus, some people just have a more public presence on Facebook, like Gail.
What is the next one? It's just using influencer search engines. There's a lot more of these coming out these days. So it's funny because there's like influencer marketing that is completely ignored by SEO people. It's like this massive thing happening in terms of marketing these days, like brands want to work with influencers, etc. And as a result, a lot of tools are developed for brands to contact these influencers. It's like these people, they have websites and they can link to you as well. Using these tools that are not really catered to SEO people, but rather to the influencer marketing market, which is a very different segment from what you and I and everyone, most people listening to this podcast are catering for, will give you contacts to people that we will not find through SEO tools. So for example, we found one called getshout.io that gives you email and just gives you a bunch of like social data, like number of followers and niches they're in, etc. And most of these people have websites, and it gives you the email as well. And you can literally just export and email these people. And there's a bunch. I mean, Buzzstream has an influencer research. There's a few others that we're testing. We'll probably mention them later after we test them. But all I'm saying is look into the influencer marketing sphere, and especially look for the tools for influencer marketing, because it's going to give you very, very different prospects. And usually people with very clean sites, people who don't do SEO, etc., but get a lot of links. And these are the best things you can get to your website. Sidestepping into PR as well is a good one. That's the two areas that I'm looking at right now is PR and influencer marketing. These segments give you access to clean sites that are not touched by SEOs.
A lot of people, when they hear the words PR or digital PR and influencer marketing, they think of this as something very different to link building. But there's a big overlap between the three of these. And when I heard the word influencer, my initial reaction used to be, oh, that's someone with like 8 million Facebook followers or something like that.
Instagram, probably.
Yeah, some model with 500K Instagram followers, something like that. But it goes down much, much lower to, you know, someone with 3,000 followers. Yeah. And, you know, there's much lower level people who you can work with. What I will say with influencers is, in most cases, unless you can offer them, you know, your product for free or something like that, then most cases you have to pay to work with them. But for the lower level people, it's not really that much.
Yeah. So it's kind of like an interesting source of links, and it really is somewhere where SEOs are not. And usually where SEOs are not is usually much cleaner in terms of links. Yeah, digital PR and influencer marketing. I gave you some examples of tools, etc. So I would check these out. And that's basically it. We ran out of all the tactics we wanted to talk about. So any final words of wisdom, Mark?
No, just if you are kind of trying to automate this in any kind of way, just be conscious, I think, of the data quality that you're going to get with it. I mentioned when we were looking at the Facebook about page that when we tried to work with scrapers and stuff to do this automatically, one of the big problems that we had was that it was finding other people's Facebook pages because it was mentioned on the websites we were looking at in different places. And that was kind of distorting who we were trying to find the about tab and then the email address subsequently from like the wrong people. And that was that was a problem. It's difficult to solve, but it's something that kind of happens a lot when you try and do these kind of smart solutions to semi-automate or automate, fully automate some of the tactics here. So just be very cautious of data quality if you're doing any kind of automation.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the next ones. And if you enjoyed it, feel free to drop us a review on iTunes or anywhere else you're listening to the podcast. Always helps. And by the way, we're also on Spotify now. So if you're using Spotify, you can subscribe to the podcast there. And then you don't really need to use any other player. So that's basically it. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you next week. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to the Authority Hacker Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, don't forget to rate us on iTunes and send us a screenshot on authorityhacker.com/bonus to claim your free premium Authority Hacker training.